This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals. And my co-host, as always, is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, which is an Arizona Cardinals site from SB Nation. And this is episode 229. We've had a little bit of a hiatus with the offseason. I was out of the country for a little bit. Seth's been worried about dealing with a house move, and it's the slow time of year, but it's been long enough that we definitely need a show, because the offseason program is over. OTAs are all done. Mini camp is done. The rookies, in fact, will be done soon, and we are looking ahead to training camp. What has stood out to you, Seth, in the last few weeks?
I think the biggest thing has been the consistent narrative through the guys, not the coaches, not anybody else, but the guys, about Kyler Murray and just how impressive he's been to these, you know, veterans. I think all of that is super important, obviously, and I think it's, you know, going to end up being what buys in this group to whatever kind of season this is. Because, you know, when you and I have talked quite a bit, the expectations aren't more than this group, you know, improves, right? Like, we're not expecting this to be a playoff team. We're not expecting this to be a championship contending team, but we're expecting improvements. And so to hear the veterans just continue to sing the praises of Kyler Murray and everything that he's doing, I think that's a big thing.
And in part, that's what we're going to be talking about in this show. We are going to kind of go through the off-season narratives that are going to take us into this summer break. We're going to talk a little bit about training camp. We're going to talk about Kyler Murray. What is being said about this number one pick? And is it terribly different from what we heard a year ago about things like Josh Rosen? Patrick Peterson returned. He actually returned a little bit earlier than people expected. And there was a roster move. We're going to talk about that at cornerback. That was a bit of a surprise. An offseason team of rankings and lists, the Cardinals aren't getting really any love. We'll talk about that, as well as what can we expect in the month to come. Are there going to be areas in which they address on the roster? And why don't we know anything about training camp yet? And can we expect changes to training camp as we know it? So let's start that off. We'll talk about Kyler Murray. Seth, you brought up some of the things, but as things have gone, and as of course it's going to be, it has been nothing but glowing reviews. Guys like DJ Humphrey said, believe the hype. J.R. Sweezy, who played with and blocked for Russell Wilson, Josh Weinfuss quoted him. I think it was just in regular media availability, and I wrote about it today. The quote is that I see hundreds of comparisons between the two. We're getting all sorts of things. What is the part of what has been said about Kyler that stands out the most to you overall? Because we've heard about his talent. We've heard about his leadership. We've heard about his knowledge of the offense. What part has mattered the most to you?
I think that's the key. Is it's not one thing, but it's the sum of what's being said. And it's, you know, maybe it is buying into the hype, but it's just buying in, period. The veterans seem to be buying in to what Kyler Murray can be as a franchise quarterback. And like you said, some of it is stuff that we've heard from other, you know, about other rookies before, but a lot of it just consists of things that we've never heard about young quarterbacks. Obviously we haven't had a lot of those in Arizona, so it's difficult, but it sounds more like what you heard about Carson Palmer, about his, you know, knowledge of the offense and the way that people believe in him and his abilities. And that, I mean, I know this is going to be a kind of a hard sell, but when you look at Palmer and when you look at Kyler Murray, I think that there's a lot of crossover in terms of their personality. They're not really rah-rah guys. They're not, you know, they're not the fiery Tom Brady gonna get in your face type guys. They're just guys that go out there and do their job. And they're guys that, to a fault, and we haven't seen it with Kyler yet, but I know we're going to, but to a fault, a lot of the times they look at things that they made a mistake on and kind of shrug their shoulders and go, no big deal, right? Like, I'm gonna make the same throw the next time, and I promise you it's going to work. And so when you look at it from that perspective, I think you see or you're hearing similar things to what, you know, guys would say about Carson Palmer, because you're not hearing the, like, oh, yeah, he's, you know, he's really taking command of and leadership. No, it's like you said, he has command of the offense. He has command of the huddle. He has this or that, but more so it's his demeanor. It's his poise. It's his ability, you know, to make something out of nothing. And I know it's just camp, but all of these things are things that we've heard before. It's just, it's in a really different package, and so it's hard to kind of put it all into one grouping.
Yeah, and for me, that's actually a really good comparison. One that we actually haven't heard. Kyler's approach is a lot like Carson's. DJ Humphreys did bring up Carson when he was on the radio. They're talking about how do you know? He said, I was in the huddle with Carson Palmer. And when you know, he's got kind of the same look. He's got the same quiet confidence. Obviously he hasn't done it yet on the field, but I think that's an apt comparison, in terms of the way he goes about his business. Murray doesn't seem to be really fazed by anything. He doesn't, you know, he really is, in many ways, we've heard some of this stuff before. Like a year ago when it was Josh Rosen, everyone was wowed by his ability to lead, his knowledge of the 2-minute offense, just how smart he was. But they always knew in the back of their mind, this wasn't his team. It was Sam Bradford's, because everyone bought into Sam Bradford. Everyone in that locker room believed in Sam. The coaching staff believed in Sam. Josh Rosen himself was, you know, while he said he's going to try and compete, he knew that Sam was the guy. And so, but this year, you know that Murray is the guy going in. He's going to be the starter. The physical tools are there. So the players have heard and finally have seen him move and see how fast he is. They've seen the quick release. They've seen the arm strength. And while they hear other people talking about Murray's foot speed, they are impressed by his quarterbacking ability. And then the fact that he knows the offense, he's comfortable with it, and he's leading guys, putting belief that it's really interesting. And it is, believe me, now, I will say, if you guys have listened to the show for a long time, you know, I, as a longtime Cardinals fan since I was a teenager into the 90s, it's really easy for me to get sucked in and believe it. But it is really hard not to get way excited about what Kyler Murray can be, because there's just so much to like about what he can do and what we think he can do. And so it's almost going to feel unfair that we're expecting a combination of, you know, Robert Griffin and Andrew Luck all together in that rookie year.
Yeah. And I think the expectations are going to be high, but I think a lot of it is that's who he has been as a player. Whether it was in high school or even college, and now obviously the pros, is that he has been a guy that has gone in and met and exceeded expectations that were wildly high. I mean, think about it. He replaced a Heisman-winning quarterback that was drafted first overall, and all he did was
be better.
Be better, right? Like
he was better and had a, and then took his team to greater heights.
Right. And so when you, you know, when you look at it and all of that, it's easy to get caught up in the, oh, it's this, that, and the other, or, you know, all right, I want to see it on the field. And we all do. Like, there's no doubt about it, but it's also okay to be excited. It's also okay to, you know, feel like that this is a new era of Arizona Cardinals football, one that we've never seen before, and that could be something unique and special and something that allows this, you know, this franchise to put through a run of sustained success, as opposed to kind of what it has been previously, when it was more of a, you know, a flash in the pan type of thing, whether it was Wiz, whether it was Arians. I mean, both of those were very short term successes. And, you know, three years, actually, I should restate that 3 years is an eternity in NFL terms, but you know, it was not, I mean, it was 2015 when this team was competing for the NFC championship. I mean, that was 4 years ago. That was almost, I mean, after this season, that's going to be four full years since they were competing for a championship. I mean, that's longer than the successful part of the Arians era. That's crazy to think that it's been longer at this point than the success. And so, you know, it's fleeting, it's quick. And so I think it's okay to be excited about the prospects of a long-term successful NFL team. And we're not talking Patriots. I mean, Jess and I are not saying like, oh, the Cardinals are going to win, you know, six Super Bowls in 18 years. No, that's not what we're saying. But if they're the Atlanta Falcons, where maybe they're only picking in the top 10, you know, twice in 12 years, that would be fantastic, wouldn't it?
Oh, geez. Yes. Now, so what would be reasonable expectations for Kyler Murray? Because I get the feeling, and it almost feels like that people are expecting him to go in and have a Patrick Mahomes type season. And in fairness, that almost came out of nowhere. But he also did sit a year. He did sit behind Alex Smith a year. Though the circumstances are somewhat similar. Somewhat. He had a coach that would cater the offense to him. He has lots of playmakers, but obviously it was a more talented team because the team that Alex Smith led was a very successful, it was a playoff team to begin with, and Mahomes just lit the league on fire. And there's a part of me that thinks that Kyler can do the same thing, but that is completely unfair to think that, what, he's going to, like, So we're going to see, in my mind, I can see him throwing for 3,500 yards and rushing for 1,000 yards, kind of setting the league on fire. But I'm like, that's not realistic. But what's realistic to you?
You know, it's weird because I've seen projections from like fantasy sites and things like that, and they're all pretty consistent. I mean, I've seen between 3,400 and 3,800 yards passing. And I think that's fair.
Right, right. That's the NFL today. If you don't get 3,500 yards passing, you're not.
I mean, right. It's not a successful season. Let's just be honest.
If you play 16 games, if you play 16 games as a quarterback, 3,500 yards you should get. And I think what was like 20 or 21 players cracked that, or at least I think there were 21 quarterbacks last year that threw for at least 3,000 yards.
And so, you know, I've seen a lot that say like 30. I mean, if he went for 3,600 and then he went for, you know, 600 rushing, and then you kind of tie it all together and you see 30 touchdowns. So you're talking 4,000 yards from scrimmage and 30 touchdowns total. I don't think anybody would complain about that, would they? I think you would see the flashes of electricity. You would see a guy that could put on a show like few others can, but then there's still room for growth. There's still room for everything. You know, there's still room if you're talking about 30, you know, 500 yards passing and 500-600 yards rushing. There's still room for growth. There's still room for more. Where you're talking about 4,000 and 700, and then you're talking about 4,500 and 900, and then maybe you're talking about 5,000 and 1,000.
I mean, could you imagine a 5,000-yard passer and 1,000-yard rusher? How many points would the Cardinals score?
Well, and that's what I think it comes down to, is that you've got a guy that can be unique because he's a unique talent. And so I think expectations now should be right around 4,000 total yards and 25 touchdowns. And that seems astronomical, but if he's as well versed in this offense and if he's as talented as he's supposed to be, and obviously health is the biggest thing, but if you're talking about a guy that plays 16 games and takes every snap in those 16 games, there's no reason to think that he can't go for 35-5 in year one.
Well, right. And I wrote this yesterday. On Monday, since we're recording on a Tuesday night. He should be able to light up the record books for the Cardinals, especially for rookies, because the numbers are bad. He should be able to, if he's at anything anywhere near what people say he is, he should be able to set the team record for rushing yards by a quarterback. Tim Rosenbaugh ran for 470 yards. I can't remember the name of the guy, John David Crow or some ridiculously old name back in the 60s or 70s, rushed for 501, but he didn't play quarterback the whole time. He should set the rookie passing record for passing yards, because I think Matt Leinart set it with 2,500 yards or so. Touchdown passes, I think it's 13. And wins is 4. He should reasonably surpass all of that.
Yeah, I mean, he should pass everything, and it should be a season where you see that, and then you're talking about, you know, a guy that gets, like I said, you're talking about 25 total touchdowns and close to 4,000 total yards. And you're talking about a team that, you know, they won 3 games last year. So if they win 5 games or 6 games this year, that's an improvement, and that's a big improvement. And that's going in the right direction. I know everybody wants to be the team that goes worst to first, and and if it happens, great. But you're talking about a roster that's turned over, what, 70% of its personnel?
And plays in a division where you have the NFC champs and Russell Wilson.
Russell Wilson, exactly. And then a San Francisco team that's finally healthy.
We'll see if they stay healthy.
Well, but I'm saying for now, on paper, they're healthy. So I'm not, you know, I'm not expecting miracles, but I am expecting improvement. And I think that's fair.
Right. Coming up next on the Rise of C-Red podcast, we're going to talk about Patrick Peterson's return. It was earlier than expected. And the situation at cornerback, because there was a surprising roster move. That coming up next on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the way. Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And we spent a lot of time in the offseason talking about Patrick Peterson, his contract situation, his suspension, his absence. And then he came back for the last week of OTAs, which was a surprise. And apparently, that was the plan the whole time. And everything seems to be fine, except the battle at cornerback seems to have taken shape a little bit to replace him for those first 6 weeks, as the Cardinals, after minicamp was all done, released David Amerson, who started 5 games for the Cardinals last year and was realistically in the mix for being a starter for the first 6 weeks of the year. What are we to make of that move?
You know, I think there's two ways to speculate about this. The first is that something happened that we don't know about off the field. And I think by now something would have come to light, don't you?
Maybe.
I mean, it could have been super minor. So maybe, you know, it was just something that they don't want to deal with, which is fine. But the other thing is, and I truly believe this, is that they're just – Vance Joseph knows what he wants in a defense. He knows what he wants in his players. He knows what he wants. So he may have said, look, we have Tremaine Brock. I don't need David Amerson. Go find me another body, another better body for what I want in a cornerback. And that makes more, I mean, that to me makes sense.
Right. I believed all along it would end up being Tremaine Brock. The kind of thing, the interesting thing to me is in the open part of practices that I saw. Now, maybe Brock was sitting to the side as a vet because he's played a decade in the league. It wasn't him getting the first rotation among the starters. It was Amerson. And which led me to believe that maybe he might really be more in the mix at cornerback than we thought. Ultimately, I mean, Brock is the perfect guy to play 6 weeks. He is adequate and he's old. He knows the defense. And so when Patrick comes back, it's very easy to just slide him back to the bench while you let Byron Murphy, our second round rookie, just focus on nickel instead of having to focus on nickel and border for 6 weeks and then never play border again. Now, that said, I find interesting is that you rarely see someone that high on the quote unquote depth chart get released at this time of year, especially when people are speculating that it was to open up a roster spot for Andre Branch, who might or might not sign. But the guys that you end up cutting are the guys that you've never heard of. They're the camp invites. They're the undrafted rookies or the undrafted rookies from a year ago.
Especially on a regime change.
Right. And so what you've got right now is a cornerback room outside of Patrick Peterson or Robert Alford. You've got Tremaine Brock, Byron Murphy, and then you're looking at Brandon Williams again, which, God, no. I mean, I did a 53-man roster prediction after minicamp, and I still have Brandon Williams on the roster, but not for his cornerback play, but because the coaches like what he does on special teams, and they have a carryover special teams guy who obviously is going to be comfortable with guys he's familiar with. But do I want Brandon Williams anywhere near the rotation for playing? And no. So to take that competition out of the locker room, out of the playing field for practice seems weird to me.
Yeah, and it was. It was a weird timing and everything, and I'm kind of with you. It didn't make sense, but if Vance Joseph comes to you and says, you know, I don't need this guy. Let's just, you know, go somewhere else. I think you have to listen. And that's part of, you know, what this setup they have in terms of the coaching structure and that nature, and that they're going to allow kind of Vance to be in charge of the defense and making decisions on the defense. So I think that's unfortunately what they're doing, or maybe fortunately, maybe I shouldn't say unfortunately. And so and I think that also with like Andre Branch, I think we're getting back into the whole Keim thing, which is what he usually makes an offer and that's the offer. And if you want the offer, you'll take the offer. If you want to try to go find the offer somewhere else or get a better offer somewhere else, good luck. He's not going to hold it against you. And then if you come back in, you know, X amount of weeks, then you'll know that what the offer is and what's there. And if I had to guess, and I don't know anything, but if I had to guess, it's probably a veteran minimum type of deal with incentives based on playing time and sacks. And Andre probably wants a little more. And does he deserve it? I have no idea. I mean, I don't even know how good he really is. But if he wants more, then he better hope that somebody's willing to give him more, because from the people I know that have watched Andre Branch, I'd be shocked if he was able to get more than what the Cardinals may have offered him, you know, in terms of like veteran men type deal.
Now for me, I think there's one wild card in the cornerback situation, and maybe the wild card is Josh Shaw. I don't know where he stands in terms of, say, a outside border corner, but I know he's been coached by Vance Joseph before. He's versatile, and he's getting some. He's gotten some look at safety this offseason.
I thought he was going to be kind of their
Sene Benwickery. He's kind of like that guy.
Safety type guy,
but maybe his presence on the roster makes Emerson. Who knows? I don't know, but the thing is that Shaw's never been mentioned. I mean, Vance himself talked about three guys when he was on the Coach's Corner podcast. He talked about three guys who could play for Peterson. He talked about Emerson, he talked about Brock, and he talked about Murphy. So that's the weird part.
Yep. And I think you're right. I think that's, you know, kind of how they were divvying up the runs there and everything. And I'm surprised to see him go this early. But it is what it is. And it's, like you said, it's early enough where they can go find somebody now and find the guy that VJ wants and kind of put him in that area.
The offseason brings rankings, and these rankings of this offseason have brought some snubs. Coming up next on the Rise Up to Your Podcast, we're going to talk about why the Cardinals and players like David Johnson and Chandler Jones aren't getting any love. That's coming up next on Rise Up to Your Red. We're back on the Rise Up to Your Red Podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And this is the time of year where content is produced and rankings happen. And we're going to be doing some rankings here coming up soon when it comes to the division here in the next few weeks. But as we look across the internet, whether it's on NFL.com, whether you see it's SB Nation, you see on the USA Today Network, like Touchdown Wire, which is one of my sister sites, there have been lots of rankings of the top players at different positions. And what we're seeing consistently is players like Chandler Jones, David Johnson, and Patrick Peterson ranking far lower than at least fans of the Cardinals like to see. Maurice Jones-Drew on Tuesday published a list of the top running backs in the NFL. David Johnson comes in at number 25. I've seen David Johnson, another one at the top 11. He's number 9. Chandler Jones, neither Chandler Jones nor Patrick Peterson made the top 50 players, according to Pro Football Focus. Chandler Jones did not make Touchdown Wire's list of top linebackers or top edge defenders. And that included on the linebackers. I can understand that was most off the ball guys, but then they had an edge guy in Lorenzo Alexander, a guy that we're familiar with here in Arizona, a very good guy, very productive guy in Buffalo, but he was listed at a bunch with a bunch of off the ball linebackers, and Chandler's a better player than Lorenzo in terms of Lorenzo can do more things, but Chandler's better. And so is this just a case of, you know, the world's against the Cardinals? Is it just that they were so terrible last year, or is it possible that the stars on the Cardinals, maybe they're not as good as what we think they are?
I think there's a combination of a lot of those things. I think guys like Peterson and Jones get buried for lesser players that play on better teams. Like, I'm not sure Stephon Gilmore is the best cornerback in the NFL, and I think Doug had that ranking, right?
If I remember correctly. That sounds right.
And so, you know, and I'm not saying that Gilmore is not maybe better than Peterson, but I don't know. I mean, have we ever seen Peterson in a system that actually acquiesces his abilities to the best, you know? I wrote about this because I think this is the only one, well, since it was the only one that really featured a Cardinal, but I think it was the only one I really wrote about from Touchdown Wire was, you know, I think they had Peterson ranked like 6th in corners in the NFL. And I thought, you know, okay, that's fair. But the funny thing is if you go back from, you know, basically 2011 until now, Peterson's always in those rankings, right? He's always in the top 10 in those rankings. Everybody else has changed. Everybody else is different. You get guys like Chris Harris and Marshawn Lattimore and Gilmore all coming in, and guys like Richard Sherman and Champ Bailey and trying to think of the other, you know, Josh Norman and those guys going out. So when you look at it, has Peterson ever been the best corner over an entire season in the NFL? Maybe not. I can't say definitively, but maybe not. But would you take anybody else's career at this point? I mean, he's still playing at an insanely high level. He's still, you know, a true number one corner in the NFL in a league that's made passing the most important aspect of the game. So so when you look at it from that perspective, I always think Peterson's underrated because of his coverage ability. From there, you know, like I said, Jones is going to get overlooked a lot because he plays on an awful team. And he's a sack guy. He's a sack guy that produces at a high level, but he's a sack guy on a bad team that's not producing at historical level like so many sack guys right now are doing. I mean, we're talking about guys like, you know, Aaron Donald producing 20 sacks in a season. And it's like, ho-hum, Chandler Jones had 12. And I think 12 was only like in the top 10. It wasn't even in the top 5 this year, right? So,
yeah.
So that's the crazy part of it. You know, David Johnson's one of those weird guys where he's had obviously one kind of historic season. And from there, he's not, I mean, obviously he was really good his half kind of season in 2015, his rookie season. But for the most part, he was a guy that you know, he's only really had one good season. He had the obviously the injury in 17 where he didn't even play, and then 18 he was just kind of a running back. And that's not to take away anything from him, but when you look at kind of running back statistics, that's what the whole running back, you know, zero running back theory is that these guys are basically replaceable commodities that you don't need to pay or draft highly or anything like that. And so, you know, I think Johnson is the and then you look at it with, and you've got, you know, Todd Gurley and Zeke Elliott and Le'Veon Bell, and those guys are all one kind of in the news for one reason or the other, and then two, David Johnson just hasn't produced as expected since that astronomical 2016 season. And so I think that's the combination of it. Fitz is still well respected, but he's also looked at as a guy that's 36. I mean, it is what it is there. And so when you look at these rankings, a lot of them, and this isn't, we both write for sites that need clicks, so we understand this, but a lot of them are just done because they garner outrage clicks. They garner what, you know, Jess and I don't write like this, but we understand the idea behind it, and it's to get hate clicks because people want to hate read why their team's favorite player is ranked low or, you know, leave an angry comment about how could you not put, you know, Chandler Jones. And so just it's a game that's played. don't fall too much into the guise of it. But when it comes to a discussion, I think you can make a case where those guys all deserve to be mentioned as top. I mean, when you look at Jones and Peterson, I would say they're top, or sorry, Jones and Johnson, I would say they're top 10 guys at their position. And when you look at Peterson, I think until he shows differently, he's always a top 5 guy at his position. I think he's perpetually underrated, and I say that as somebody that doesn't advocate for his, you know, kind of shenanigans that he's tried to pull off the field recently. So, you know, he's a guy that is unique in his ability and his success in what he does.
And for me, when it comes to ranking Johnson, I understand he's the one player of those three whose rankings I kind of get. Because
25 is too low. Let's be honest.
That's grossly underrating him. But at the same time, he's been nothing special the last two seasons.
Not necessarily
his fault.
Right. And he's got an astronomical contract.
Yeah.
And so if you're factoring in a contract, maybe, I mean, I still would not agree, but I can at least see your point where you're saying, like, look, from a talent perspective, maybe he's top 12, but I'm not paying this guy, what is it, $12 million a year?
So. Well, and for me, you know, what's interesting is that where David Johnson's kind of gotten lost is that he set the curve for the running. Like, Le'Veon Bell and David Johnson really set the curve for the new running back. And now they're no longer novelties. That there are a dozen or so running backs with the same type of skill set. Maybe not quite the same skill set, because David Johnson can play receiver like a receiver. But in terms of production as a pass catcher and as a runner, David Johnson is not novel anymore. There are a whole bunch of guys in the league like that, and that's where he gets pushed down the list. Does he deserve more than 25? That's, I mean, 25 is ridiculous. He's not a bottom third. He's not a bottom third running back in the league. He's still one of the most talented players at the position. We just need to see it used better. Now, Chandler Jones to me is ridiculous. And I will continue to say this. There are two players that the Cardinals have had who deserved to be Defensive Player of the Year and never got any buzz across the nation at all. 2013, Carlos Dansby was incredible. And 2017, Chandler Jones was, statistically, there was nobody in the league more disruptive behind the line of scrimmage. Think of it. He led the league in sacks, tackles for loss, and QB hits. So he was getting to the quarterback, he was hitting the quarterback, and he was dominant in the run game. Now, last year was an off year. He put up statistics, but he wasn't impactful overall. He didn't have the same impact he did 2 years ago, but he has more sacks than anybody else in the league over the last 3 years. It's just ludicrous to not include him among the top edge, especially if you're talking at the position. There aren't 10 edge pass rushers better than he is. And he's going back to a scheme in which he was, to me, the best defensive player in the game. Peterson, I'll forgive you if you're talking about looking to 2019 and he's going to miss the first third of the season. But nonetheless, I still believe full-heartedly that both Jones and Peterson are a top 50 players in the league because they are among the best at their position, and their two positions are premium positions in the NFL. I mean, I get they were a 3-win team. I get other things, but I don't understand how you can make a list and that on top of that, why you would try to generate hate clicks from the smallest fan base in the league.
Yeah. But I mean, and then you have things like, you know, I've seen quarterback rankings and they, you know, I've seen them where they put Murray at the end and they say, oh, you know, the top rookie, will, you know, obviously we'll know more later. And then I see where they put him at like 24 and I'm like, well, how can you put him at 24 right now if you've never seen him play? So, I mean, it goes kind of back and forth, and you kind of just have to decide how you want to look at it. Obviously, like Cliff Kingsbury is at the bottom of the barrel in terms of coaching ranking. So it's all, you know, it all becomes relative to what you're looking at and everything. So, I think in the end, the Cardinals just have to do one thing, and that's perform. I mean, you know, it took a couple years for Bruce Arians and Steve Keim to be considered some of the best at their positions. So we'll see how this kind of turns out.
Coming on next to the Rise Up C-Rip podcast, we're going to look ahead. What are the areas in which the Cardinals still need to address? That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Rip. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We are a few weeks away from training camp, we believe. The Cardinals don't have much cap space. That's why they have very little money. What are areas that they still need to or should address before camp begins?
I think, you know, we hit on one cornerback. I'd like to see another body in there and a body that can compete, not just, you know, a body. that would be one for me. I'll let you go next. So I'll say corner to start with.
When you look at Andre Branch as a guy who could come in, and if you're looking at depth at outside linebacker, he makes sense. The Cardinals really do have three guys set at the outside linebacker position. You've got Chandler Jones, you've got Brooks Reed, and you've got Terrell Suggs. That fourth spot, I mean, you could go with a developmental guy. You've got Montarius Dora, Cameron Malvo. Not, you know, guys that show some promise but really haven't done anything in the league. Or you could bring in someone like Branch, who played for Vance Joseph before, who's had production in the league. He's been in the league a long time. And it really sort of continues to with the trend of loading up this defense with veterans familiar with the system who can really kind of mitigate the growing pains. I see that as an okay position to address. Even if they're not necessarily going to play a whole lot defensively, I don't think there's any outside of a cornerback. You really don't need to address anything. But the one other position I find it the most curious is, considering the problems that they've had over the last 2-3 years, that they are riding Zane Gonzalez at kicker with no competition when he has yet to show any consistency in the NFL. I'm not saying you need to go out and sign Matt Bryant or try and get Robbie Gould, because Matt Bryant, as good as he was last year, there's two of the last 4 years he's played in fewer than the 16 games. He's 44 years old, which he's not going to be cheap, and it makes you feel like Phil Dawson. But but are they really going to just enter camp with Zane Gonzalez having the job and not do anything?
Yeah, that's a good question. Are they really going to do this again?
I mean, it could pay off. I mean, ASU guys, ASU fans, he was so good in college, and he was good for the Cardinals late last year. He did miss an extra point, but he was 7 of 9 on field goals, and the only two misses were from beyond 50 yards. But consistency has not found Gonzalez in the NFL yet. And there are a number of reasons why, whether it was holder, field conditions, this and that. But in the end, he has yet to prove he is a legitimate NFL right, kicker.
He's a guy you can trust game in and game out.
Right. It's different than Chandler Catanzaro when entering 2015, when in 2014 he had beaten out Jay Feely and then kicked well all that year.
Correct. And so, you know,
or rather 2015 and then going to 2016, he gave him the job and then he was the head case.
Yeah. And so I think you're right. I mean, kickers one, I actually had a conversation with somebody today about that, about how it's kind of odd that they've just kind of been like, oh, yep, he's our guy. I mean, and they haven't really said that, but they haven't really shown that he's not the guy. So,
yeah, when the only guy that they brought in this offseason was a kicker named Cole Murphy, who
they cut early.
He wasn't even good in college.
Yeah. And so you've got that. So, you know, I think when you look at all of that, it's interesting to look at. I've wondered if they need to bring in a veteran running back. Not because, you know, for anything other than if David Johnson goes down. And my argument was this. Like, if you bring in a veteran running back and he's just here through training camp and the preseason, and he doesn't even have to run the ball much, but so he's learning the offense and everything. And then God forbid something happens to David Johnson early. Isn't it nice that somebody's already kind of up to speed on calls and looks and thoughts, as opposed to going, you know, if David Johnson gets hurt going forward with Chase Edmonds, TJ Logan and DJ Foster or whoever else they decide to keep. I've wondered if they just need to have a veteran running back kind of through the system and through the offseason just to have the nomenclature and make it really easy in case something were to happen, unfortunately.
Yeah, are there any of the positions outside of that? I mean, I know the Cardinals don't really have any money.
That's the weirdest thing, is that they've had to do so much and they have no money.
They really can't do anything.
They had to bring in so many players.
Safety is an area where maybe.
But it's the same type of thing. If anything were to happen to Swearinger, you really have nobody.
Right. You've got, they did draft Deontay Thompson, so.
But I just mean, you have no veteran. Like, you have no, there's no veteran depth. And that's the weird thing to me. is a lot of the positions, there's just no veteran depth.
Nope, that's because all the veterans they signed are starters. they're all starting.
Yeah, and so they better hope that everybody kind of stays healthy.
That's it. Coming up next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, we're going to wrap up this show talking about, well, the fact that we don't know about training camp yet, and some speculation about what could happen that will not please fans because of things that's going on in the league. That's coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, and we still don't have a schedule for training camp. A year ago, on June 1st, the Cardinals released the training camp schedule. We are now on the night of June 18th, and by the time y'all listen to this, it'll be the 19th or the 20th, and we still don't know what the training camp schedule will be, other than the fact that based on their preseason opener, that they can open training camp on July 24th, so just over a month away. And here's the thing that we're a little, at least me, I find a little bit of a concern. One, we don't have the plans. And two, we are seeing a trend throughout the league of teams making fewer training camp practices open than in years past. The Bills are having the fewest number of open practices since 2000. The Eagles only one. And this is coming off of a year where the Cardinals, who Bruce Arians and Ken Wisenhunt, almost every single training camp practice was open. That was somewhere between 17 and 19. Last year, Steve Wilks cut that down to 9. And you have to wonder what's going to happen with Cliff Kingsbury, because in training camp, it's a practice. You see what type of things they do on offense. And Cliff Kingsbury thus far has not been willing at all to give any sort of clue to what the offense is going to look like. Are we going to get any training? Are we going to get any open practices this year, or even fewer than the 9 they had last year?
I think it'll end up being fewer than the 9. And I think it's going to be something that maybe for the first couple seasons is something that we see from this regime as they try to implement their system and get people to buy in and you know, with so much of it coming from the sidelines and from calls and things of that nature, when you're talking about no huddle and spread and things like that, I get to an extent the shroud of secrecy, but at the same time, you have to be confident in what you're building, what you're doing, and allowing reporters and fans to see things that you may not be ready to show opponents yet. You know, it's something that we've seen with more NFL teams, and I mean, one of the best franchises in the last couple seasons, the Philadelphia Eagles, they've cut all but one practice. So it's not like it's just the Cardinals and Cliff Kingsbury and his new regime. I mean, this is something that is happening throughout the league where they're kind of reducing the amount of availability during training camp for fans. Now, I will say it goes counterintuitive to the whole let's move training camp to State Farm Stadium and let these guys play. So that's the hard part.
The thing about training camp was interesting is if they end up like – if they're not going to have open practices, then it becomes the question, well, why would they need to do it at the stadium? Which leads to the other question, which is part of the training camp experience is the fact that they take these players away from their families for days at a time. They all must stay in the team hotel. If they're just going to do it at the team facility, then you kind of lose that aspect of it where it's all football all the time and you don't go home at all. And if you're going to still do it at the stadium, well, why in the world would you not have the fans there? Because there's revenue to be had because of the concessions. You build a lot of goodwill. And the truth is, after the season that they had last year, this team really does need to connect more with the fan base and to provide more opportunities for this team to win out. Because while there is all sorts of buzz about this team and Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray, we don't know much about this team because Kingsbury has been so tight-lipped. And I'm not even talking about what the offense will be. I get that. But reporters have even asked, you know, in years past, it's one of common things. So after OTAs, after rookie minicamp, you ask, so who are some players who have stood out? Kingsbury isn't giving anything. He's not even tipping his hand as to who are the players who have stood out. We heard about guys like Greg Little and Trent Sherfield a year ago. We've heard Earl Watford's name year after year. So we don't even get names of guys who are doing stuff, with the exception of in one interview with Vance Joseph, Dennis Gardeck. Other than that, from the head coach, we have heard nothing about any specific player other than Kyler's doing what he's supposed to. We'll see. We're tailoring things. We're just putting things together, seeing what our guys can do. It's kind of in the same song and dance without singling out guys. And I think that's an important part of the offseason. It's an important part of training camp is it's one way to connect the fans to the team, which they badly need to do after the disaster of last season.
Yeah, and like that's the weird thing with this kind of like shroud of secrecy and that they've created and that they're fostering with this is it's not your father's Cardinals, and this is, and maybe because the Cardinals haven't had a ton of success, maybe that's not a bad thing. But from a fan aspect, I definitely understand why fans are like kind of would get into this what the hell's going on thing, because this was a team that was you know, had some success under Bruce Arians, and then they went to Steve Wilks and everything imploded, and now everybody's kind of just like, all right, well, what's going to happen next? And they're basically saying wait and see. And you're like, no. The last time you started to make things secret, the last time you started to do certain things, that didn't work out for me. So give me some updates. Like, let me know what's going on, because I'm a fan. I'm somebody that's put time and energy and effort into being a fan of this team. I deserve more than just wait and see. So, you know, it's tough, but I get it from both perspectives.
And ultimately, the part that I find comical is the fact that is Kingsbury really building an offense that no one has ever seen? Is it going to be vastly different from what he did at Texas Tech, in which there's plenty of tape on? And if it's not going to be like that or so revolutionary, what's it going to matter if people see it? Because of all the secrecy, sure, you might have an advantage in week one against a Detroit Lions team. Who knows if they're any good? But once you play week one, then it's out there, and people will know what your offense looks like. I get the concept, but it seems, and maybe the fact of the matter is that we in Arizona have been spoiled by the last several coaches and their openness to reporters in terms of what they say. Kingsbury is not, I mean, no one is saying that Cliff Kingsbury is Bill Belichick or even Dirk Cutter, who seem to grate at anything any reporter asks. But after Denny Green, well, heck, after after
Steve
McGinnis, Denny Green, Ken Whisenhunt, Bruce Arians, and Steve Wilks. All of them were very affable with the media and very open. I mean, Arians didn't necessarily give anything up. He would answer anything, questions, and then some of it just was a lie. Steve Wilks was very forthcoming about things and players and was very clear about what he wouldn't say. But Kingsbury just leaves it very ambiguous. And there's nothing wrong with that, but in terms of what we do, of what fans do, it's so much more interesting to have a coach that reveals things, even if it's a lie or a half truth or a partial truth.
Yeah, and that's kind of where they're at right now. We're trying to figure out where they're going and what they're doing, and the unknown makes it just a little more difficult to kind of buy in. And I kind of, to round out this discussion of what we talked about, buying in and everything, not knowing anything, just kind of taking your word for it, especially after last season. Right. I mean, you want me to believe in what you're telling me after last season? No way, dude. Like, you show it to me on the field. Don't sell me another bill of goods. And so that's, I get that, that struggle. And then, why that's difficult for fans and media alike.
And with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea-Red podcast. We will be back in 2 or 3 weeks. We'll see what happens then. Unless something earth-shattering happens between now and then. But we are now at the summer break for the Cardinals. Our next show will likely be our rankings. Well, we will talk about the entire division and kind of rank the entire division by position, and then we will be getting ready for training camp. So until then, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Go Cardinals, and thanks for listening as always. We will be back in a couple of weeks. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms, so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red. Whoa!